content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book Month by Month Gardening in the Carolinas by Bob Polomsky. And we left that off last time in April, and we were doing problem solve in different areas. And this area is edibles. And Mexican bean beetles, both adults and larvae, feed on bush, pole, and lima beans by skeletonizing the leaves from below. Hand-pick and destroy beetles and larvae on the leaves, or deposit them in a jar of soapy water. Parasitic wasps help control the beetles. Insecticides are also available. Look for flea beetles on eggplant. They are about 1.5 inches long, shiny black in color, and chew tiny holes in leaves. Control with the appropriate insecticides. Cutworms damage seedlings and transplants by cutting stems a few inches below or just above ground level. They feed mainly at night. Leaf-footed bugs feed mostly on tomato, potato, bean, cowpea, and okra. Both nymphs and adults suck sap from pods, buds, blossoms, fruit, and seeds, causing distorted leaves and distorted or deformed fruit. Their life cycle lasts about 40 days, with many generations per year. Plant early to avoid the first generation. Hand-picking and destroying the eggs are time-consuming, but effective measures. Insecticides are available. Control weed seedlings when they are young because they grow rapidly and can be more difficult to remove later. A sharpened hoe is a good friend in the garden. And for lawns, rust attacks bluegrass and fescue, causing leaves to turn yellow before turning brown and dying. Look for red, orange, or brown spores. Many grass varieties have good to moderate levels of resistance, so this disease shouldn't be much of a problem. Excuse me. Collect infected grass clippings to prevent spores from spreading. Water in the early morning to avoid keeping the grass wet for long periods. Dollar spot attacks bluegrass, fescue, Bermuda, zoysia, and sometimes centipede grass and St. Augustine's grass. It produces small circular areas of straw-colored grass from 1 to 6 inches across. Straw-colored lesions with reddish-brown borders sometimes extend across the leaf blade, while the tip remains green. Early in the morning, a spiderweb-like growth may extend over the area. Maintain adequate levels of fertility, especially nitrogen, because this disease favors hungry lawns. Fungicides are generally unnecessary. Spring dead spot is a fungal disease that primarily attacks Bermuda grass. In the spring, look for dead, circular, or donut-shaped patches, 2 or 3 feet across, as the Bermuda grass comes out of dormancy. Cut out the patches and mix the soil or remove the soil and replace with clean soil. To manage this disease, avoid excessive nitrogen applications in late summer and fall and aerify lawns to reduce thatch. Florida betony is a fast-spreading cool-season perennial weed often called rattlesnake weed because it produces white segmented tubers like a rattlesnake's tail. It emerges from seeds and tubers during the cool, moist months of fall. It grows and spreads rapidly throughout the winter months. From late spring to early summer, Florida betony bears white to pink flowers. Growth stops at the onset of high temperatures, and the plant becomes nearly dormant. Pull or dig out all plant parts, especially the tubers. When the soil is moist, hoe or cut the top growth down to the soil level repeatedly to starve the plant. Spot treat with a recommended herbicide. And for perennials, watch out for aphids and whiteflies on Coreopsis, chrysanthemums, sedum, verbena, and others. Snails and slugs may be a problem on hosta, lingularia, bear's breeches, and other perennials. Look for columbine leaf miners, the larva tunnels between the upper and lower leaf surfaces, producing telltale grayish-white serpentine trails. There are several generations of larvae and adults per year. Control leaf miners by crushing the larvae inside the leaf before they become too disfigured or by cutting off the leaf altogether and removing it from the garden. For heavy infestations, cut columbines to the ground after flowering. New growth will soon emerge. At the end of the growing season, remove any debris near the base of your plants to reduce next year's overwintering offspring. Not all columbines are equally susceptible to this pest. The native columbine, for example, is reported to be less susceptible to leaf miner attack. Botrytis blight attacks peony buds, causing them to turn black and shrivel up. This fungal disease also attacks flowers, stalks, leaves, and leaf petioles. Remove and dispose of infected plant parts as soon as you spot them. If necessary, apply a fungicide in the spring as new shoots emerge. Hand pull bittercress, chickweed, henbit, and other annual winter weeds before they go to seed. Pre-emergent herbicides are available for many of the more common perennials. These herbicides kill germinating weed seedlings before they appear. And for roses, it has nothing here for roses. We go to shrubs. Watch for aphids, white flies, and spider mites. Azalea lace bugs suck sap from the undersides of azalea leaves, creating stippled or blanched areas. The underside of the leaf will be covered with splattered brown or black varnish-like patches of fecal material. The leaves will turn pale green or yellow and fall off. In the Carolinas, expect 2 or 3 generations. Damage from this pest is most serious on azaleas growing, in sunny locations. If yours are growing in full sun, try moving them to a location that receives only filtered sunlight or afternoon shade. If you use an insecticide, start early in the season to destroy the first generation of nymphs. You can apply insecticidal soap or pyrethrin at 2 to 4 day intervals for a minimum of 3 applications, making sure to spray the undersides of the leaves. If there is no rain to wash the leaves, don't exceed 3 applications or you may damage the plants. Look for tea scales on the undersides of camellia and holly leaves. They look like white, waxy, or cottony oval specks. Scale insects suck plant sap and exude a sticky honeydew that's often colonized by a sooty mold fungus. The young scale insects are called crawlers and are about the size of the period at the end of a sentence. They scurry about, then settle and produce a protective shell or cover. Heavy infestations cause leaf drop. Light infestations can be scraped off the plant. Control with summer horticultural oil sprays and other pesticides. Azalea leaf gall is a fungal disease that infects newly emerging leaves and flowers of azaleas. The fleshy galls begin as light green to pink thickened areas on the leaves and turn chalky white as the spores are produced. Camellia leaf gall infects sansequoia camellias more than Japanese camellias. The gall containing the fungus eventually ruptures and disperses the spores to other plants. Hand-pick the galls and discard them. Fungicides are available. Entomosporium leaf spot is a disease that attacks red tips and Indian hawthorn, causing leaf drop. To manage this disease, there's a little information here. It says prune only in the winter before growth begins. Remove infected twigs and leaves and rake up and discard fallen leaves. Space plants far enough apart to encourage rapid drying of the leaves after rainfall. Avoid wetting the leaves because the fungus is spread by splashing water. As a last resort, protect the new leaves with a fungicide because Photinia produces several growth flushes a season. Expect fungicide applications to be a regular gardening chore. And for trees, watch out for the cool weather mites, southern red mites that attack hollies and spruce, and spider mites, which feed on arborvita, juniper, spruce, and other conifers. They attack in the spring and fall, although at higher elevations they may be active all summer long. Dogwood, anthracnose is a devastating fungal disease of flowering dogwoods. It produces leaf spots and cankers on the twigs and trunk, eventually killing the tree. Fungicides can control this disease. Dogwoods that are resistant to dogwood anthracnose include steeple and the stellar hybrids, which are hybrids between flowering dogwood and coosa dogwoods. Many leaf diseases become active as the trees begin to leaf out. For example, apple scab attacks apples and crab apples as they come out of winter dormancy. Velvety brown to olive spots develop on the undersides of the leaves as they emerge in the spring. Eventually, the spots turn black and the leaf dies. While apple scab will not kill your crab apple, severe leaf drop 2 or 3 years in a row can weaken your tree. As with all diseases, reduce future infections by collecting and disposing of fallen leaves. While fungicides are available, consider growing cultivars that are resistant to scab and other disease, such as fire blight, cedar apple rust, and powdery mildew. A few of these cultivars are Autumn Treasure, Adirondack, Centurion, Callaway, Donald Wyman, Indian Summer, Molten Lava, and Tina. And next, for vines and ground covers. Watch out for aphids, white flies, and spider mites. Evaluate the injury and decide if pest control measures are warranted. Large flowered clematis are highly susceptible to a notorious fungal disease called clematis wilt. Hand-pull bittercress, chickweed, henbit, and other winter annuals before they go to seed. Weeds can be hoed out, but lightly so as not to disturb the ground covers. Grassy weeds can be controlled with a selective post-emergent grass herbicide. And for water gardens, any diseased leaves should be removed and discarded promptly. And that ends our April information. And now we go into May. This must be the time for springtime flowers because my wife's allergies tell her so. She wonders aloud why plants have to bloom with such gusto. Alternatively, there are those who ask the age-old question, why don't my plants bloom? Has it ever flowered? How long has it been in the landscape? Is this the first year that it hasn't bloomed? Has the floral display declined over the years? Answers to these questions provide clues to determine what done it. If a plant has never bloomed, it could be related to the age or maturity, climate, soils, light, or something else. Determine which one is missing or limiting and correct it. Here are a few factors that need to be evaluated. Plant maturity. Some trees do not flower until they reach a certain age. Seedling dogwoods generally do not flower until they are 7 years old. Seed growth grown southern magnolias may take 10 or 12 years before blooming. Climate. Cold temperatures often kill flower buds, while posing no harm to vegetable buds, leaves, and stems. Our temperature fluctuations in winter and spring plays havoc with our plants. When a plant breaks dormancy and starts growing in response to warm temperatures, it is more susceptible to injury when an uninvited cold air mass suddenly rolls in. Soils. Inadequate soil preparation or overly wet or dry soils affect flowering. Could the soil pH be too acidic, or is a nutrient lacking or unavailable? Over-fertilizing with nitrogen will keep newly planted shrubs and trees in the business of making lots of leaves at the expense of flowers. And light. Inadequate light may prevent flower bud set. If a plant has never flowered, it was probably planted in shade that was too dense at the start. If it used to flower, surrounding plants or new structures may have reduced sunlight to prevent it from flowering. I hope this helps those readers who want to experience that rush of euphoria when their shrubs and trees burst into bloom. For those who wish that it would go away, the flowers, as well as the itchy eyes, runny noses, and scratchy throats, I share your pain, or at least my wife does. And now we'll start with May, and we get our first topic is plan. Annuals. Too busy to enjoy your garden during the daylight hours, then create an evening garden with annuals that look their best at twilight. These flowers open in the evening or release fragrances at night to attract night-flying pollinators such as moths. One of the more familiar night-blooming annuals is flowering tobacco. Petunias open by day and release their scent at night. Try the varieties Celebrity White, Ultra White, or Apollo. Other night-blooming annuals to consider are the Moonflower Vine, Angel's Trumpet, Night Phlox, and Night-Scented Stock. For bulbs, as spring flowering bulbs begin to fade, make plans to fill their voids with flowering annuals that are neither direct sown or as seed or planted from transplants. Avoid injuring bulbs when planting over them. Summer and fall flowering bulbs also make good fillers for a continuous floral display. Piedmont and coastal gardeners can continue to plant summer bulbs. Mountain gardeners need to wait until the last expected freeze this month. When selecting bulbs for the summer and fall landscape, use your list of recommended types and cultivars. Pay particular attention to height and spread, bloom time, flower color, and fragrance. Finally, determine how many bulbs you'll need so you won't come home short-handed. And our next topic is edibles. If you lack the space for an herb and vegetable garden, consider growing them in containers. Remember these points. Choose white or light-colored containers, which absorb less heat than dark-colored ones in full sun. The container should be large enough to provide root growing space. A 1 gallon container is suitable for beets, carrots, lettuce, onions, and radishes. A 2 gallon pot is fine for bush beans, mustard, and turnips. A minimum of 5 gallons would be necessary for bush squash, cabbage, and other cool crops, cucumbers, melons, and tomatoes. Use a soilless potting soil for small containers because the expense of prepackaged or soilless mixes can be high for large container gardens. Prepare your own soil by mixing equal parts of peat moss, potting soil, and clean, coarse builder's sand or perlite. Container-grown vegetables and herbs have the same requirements for light, moisture, and nutrients as garden-grown plants. Being confined to containers, however, means they require more frequent watering, which leaches out nutrients, so they also require more frequent fertilizing. Use a slow-release fertilizer to make fewer applications. For lawns, you encourage the development of a deep root system by watering only when the need arises. Look for signs of moisture stress, folded or curled leaves, a dull bluish-gray color, and footprints that remain in the grass long after you've walked over it. Water areas that exhibit these symptoms first. Irrigate only those areas that are important to your landscape. And it looks like we've run out of time right now for today's episode of Out in the Garden. But be sure to listen next time, and I will continue with the topic of how to raise a good lawn. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and I hope you'll join us again in our next session when we continue with lawns.